Twice exceptional kids are a puzzle, gifted and learning disabilities. How do we support? How do we teach? More to come. This is the On Boys Parenting Podcast. We are your co-host, Jennifer L.W. Fink of buildingboys.net, and I'm Janet Allison of boysalive.com. Thanks for being our listeners, and it means so much to us when you click through and support our sponsors too. Picture this, a seven-year-old boy, a boy who lights up a room with his enthusiasm for learning, so much so that he can't sit still and can barely wait for his many, many questions to be answered. But then regular schoolwork becomes frustrating, boring, and difficult for him, and his behavior in the classroom begins to cause some problems. Now, we know that by the time this boy, and so many like him, turn 10, the shining light in his eyes will have dimmed, and there's a great chance that he's turned all that frustration and boredom into anger. From happy and engaged to hating and refusing school, this is a somewhat typical journey for twice exceptional boys. Twice exceptional boys, or 2E, are those that are gifted and also have a learning disability, or ADHD, or on the autism spectrum, or dyslexia or dysgraphia. Here to help us understand all of the elements of 2E and dispel some common myths is Deb Generelli. She is the author of Twice Exceptional Boys, A Roadmap to Getting It Right. She has worked as a gifted student interventionist for over 3 decades. Welcome, Deb.
Thanks, Janet and Jennifer. I'm so excited to be with you today.
This is going to be a great conversation. First of all, tell us about twice exceptional kids.
Right. Well, twice exceptional students, number one, are hard to identify in a school. It's hard to know exactly how many there are, but they're there. And generally what happens is either their gifted or strengths overshadow their learning differences, or their learning differences overshadow their strengths and talents, or the strengths and learning differences kind of negate each other. And the teacher or the parent thinks, you know, they've just got an average kid here. They're doing okay in school, and there's no really bells going off, so to speak, or alarms that would make you focus on that child for any special needs that they might have.
So your book focuses specifically on boys. Tell us why, because we know girls can be 2E also.
I've taught and worked with many twice exceptional girls. It was never my intention to write specifically about boys. But what happened was, Janet, the opening dialogue that you just read from my book started my journey to discover why so many twice exceptional boys kept coming onto my path as a gifted education specialist. It wasn't that the girls didn't stand out, but the boys, 4 to 1, kept coming either from regular ed teachers coming to me and asking, you know, what's going on with this little boy, or what's going on with this junior high kid? We know something's not quite right. And so I began investigating why more boys kept coming to my attention than girls. And I discovered a lot of things. And after so many kept coming across my path in my profession, after getting each child on a better path, a better journey with a roadmap, and I'll kind of define what a roadmap is in education, those kids' lives tended to turn around for the better. And many times a new parent would come across or call me or contact me, and I would tell them the success story of one of my former students. And I thought, you know what? I've told these stories so many times, I have got to write about them. Mm-hmm. And that's how the book came about. I just thought, I've got to put this out into the world, because there are so many families beyond the ones that I'm touching that they need to hear these stories and hopefully find some support and some hope that with the proper roadmaps and plans in place and the right support, your kid really can do better in school and go from surviving to thriving.
In my experience, You mentioned early on, you know, that they can be hard to identify because sometimes, like, you know, the giftedness sort of catches your eye and that's what you're noticing and you're missing the struggle. In my experience, oftentimes with boys especially, it is the struggle that attracts attention. And it's partly because I think we all are living in a society in our schools, like, we hone in on areas of struggle. Where are you not doing well? We'll help you do better at that. And then the other part is that so often for boys, you know, this does involve things like behavior issues, acting out. And then you combine that with, you know, Janet, we've talked before about generally, overwhelmingly, especially elementary teachers are female, may not understand the male experience, may have some totally unconscious bias against boys. And so you mix all that together. Mm-hmm. And I think for a lot of people, it's much easier to see a problem boy
yes.
than
yes.
a promising boy, even though
yes.
both can be true at once.
I love how you said that, a promising boy, a promising student. Although my career is predominantly in gifted ed, that's my passion, because many gifted students actually are challenged and struggle to find their needs met academically, socially, emotionally. Mm-hmm. When I found your podcast and read about you ladies, I just thought, score, kudos. Because not only as a parent, but an educator working with boys for 40 years, I have seen that time and time again. And, you know, my husband will tell you, even though I'm out of the regular classroom now and I'm a gifted education consultant, I consult with parents across the country and a few actually out of our country, they're finding the same things. Even after all these decades, generally schools are not focused on the way boys traditionally learn.
No.
And as you said, Jennifer, I talk about this in my book that predominantly elementary to middle school are female teachers, even though those teachers may have sons, they may have gifted or 2E sons, but the way they teach is still predominantly geared towards girls.
Mm-hmm.
And part of my job as a gifted education advocate was to help support regular ed teachers with ways to teach all kinds of kids, particularly those that are neurodiverse. And regular ed teachers, and I can tell you my first 4 years, you know, out of college, no one taught me how to work with different types of kids. You just
Yeah, Janet,
to
how about you?
Never talked about this in
right.
my degree.
And as you said, ladies, you focus on the kids who are struggling. And so, and if that could be a really smart kid, you're not really focused on, they'll be okay in that area, but I really need to help them learn how to spell
yes.
or write a paragraph,
yes.
Behave themselves. And they don't stop to think about why the behaviors are tied to the frustration.
I come at this from a very personal perspective. Honestly, my youngest is now 18. My oldest is 26. I'm not entirely sure if anybody is 2E. I have some guesses that I didn't realize at the time, but I'm quite sure that we have dealt with some giftedness and struggles related to that. One of my sons, it did not take him until he was 10 to find out he hated school. He got halfway through kindergarten and he announced he hated
yeah.
school. And
oh, yeah.
so much of what you write about, you know, struggles on the playground, all of this was part of it. And we ultimately decided to homeschool was kind of how we solved this issue for our family. And I went to a homeschool conference. There was a woman there talking about, you know, gifted people. And she described giftedness as more intense, more this,
yes.
more that. And I sat there, I'm like, oh, nobody had ever told
right.
me that. I didn't understand
no.
that. Can you elaborate? Because we have these misconceptions on what gifted is. And I think it's really
right.
important to have a solid baseline here.
So giftedness, if you think of neurodiversity, and that word is now being used quite a bit, but in the beginning, that word really was tied to autism. But neurodiversity means a different way of thinking, a different way of learning, a different way of behaving. And so gifted students have overexcitabilities, and there's many categories of them. One of them is intensity. So the way they feel things, the way they interpret things, a teacher can be standing in front of the room and say something incorrectly. And that student, if they're younger, they may say, that's not right. But as they get older in junior high, they start losing respect for those
teachers. Oh my gosh, and Deb, we've not talked
about
this.
Am I speaking your language?
You just described two specific examples. That son I was talking about, yep, he was the one calling it out, which, you know, teachers don't really appreciate in elementary school.
No.
And was I in sixth grade when my teacher diagrammed a sentence wrong? And I'm like, oh my God, how can you teach us this stuff? Yes, I was.
Oh, Jen.
That's right. That's
Gosh,
right.
Gosh, dang.
I was the same way. And I've gotten more verbal as I've gotten older, but I did that in high school as well. I just, so intensity is one of those things where, and when it comes to boys, and we can elaborate on this as we go, but those intensities in boys are treated differently than the intensities in girls. You know, I know you ladies have talked about it, but cultural differences, and I'll just stick to America, but cultural differences in our country when it comes to intensity and being able to follow your passions and things like that are treated differently in boys than girls. And I referenced a wonderful book, two of them, Real Boys and Smart Boys, that I have by once by Dr. Pollack, William Pollack. He talks about the myths, you know, of boys. Boys will be boys, boys should be boys, and boys are toxic. And so when you have an intense boy and you haven't determined that, oh, they're really smart, and they're interpreting that as something that's deeply personal, or I want to fix that. It could be like I had a student back when 9/11 occurred, and that student, that entire year, you know, that happened in September, that entire year, that student could not get past a lot of issues. And this was a second grader. So we can't ignore the fact that students that have high intelligence look at things in different ways, learn in different ways, behave in different ways. Mm-hmm. And so if we would spend more time, and I discussed this with my chapters, and my publisher said, do we really need that chapter about intervention specialists who understand those kinds of kids to help regular ed teachers work with those kids? Because that's where the kids are most of the time, unless they're Jennifer taken out and homeschooled. They have to be taught that we're not going to punish these kids or try to fix them. And when it comes to a 2E boy, we really, I've seen too much of this. We want to fix them. And I squelch that like as soon as I get that vibe. I'm like, no, this is who they are. And we're going to understand them and support their needs, whatever they are.
I'm curious, Deb, because you've been at this for a long time. And Jen and I have talked so many times about the frustration of trying to have an effective change in a school system. Like it is, right, you know, molasses. It just is not changing. I wonder if you have seen any changes. And, you know, I never heard about a gifted interventionist when I was teaching. Wasn't that long ago, but do schools have this now? We know funding is so short in most schools, right. I would say. Is this a thing? Could a listener out there reach out to their school district and ask, and they might be told, yes, actually, we do have someone, or more likely that they don't.
Right. So, Janet, the interesting thing is in the United States, we have a national organization called National Association for Gifted Children, and every state has their own individual gifted organization. The interesting thing is, although NAGC, which is based out of Washington, D.C., promotes and supports a definition of giftedness and twice exceptionality, it's up to each individual state how they interpret that, and then if they're actually going to do anything about identification and servicing. In Ohio, and I speak about that in my book, in Ohio, we mandate that you identify, but we do not mandate that you service. Now, go figure that one out.
Yeah.
And I will tell you from a personal experience, when I moved to Ohio, I taught in a school district, and levies are a huge thing. And levies actually, it's not like, and I taught in Texas as well. In Texas, property taxes, you know, fund schools. In Ohio, levies and bonds push that needle towards supporting different types of programs. So if you have a school district that continually passes their levies, the community support education there, you generally will find gifted education specialists, not just special ed. Special ed's a whole nother dynamic. You will see those in schools by the dozens, and I won't get into that. But gifted specialists, we're generally in Ohio funded half by the school district and half by Ohio money.
Oh,
and
that's
so when
interesting.
levies come up, I actually, my job and my partner's job were pawns, like on a chessboard, being played to the community as though if they didn't pass the levies, we'd have to cut gifted education. Like we were costing the district so much money when that wasn't the truth at all. So one of my students that I actually wrote about was in high school at that time that levy was being trying to be passed. And he went to the school board and spoke to them about the need to keep gifted ed. And it was powerful. So Janet, your question, you know, can parents talk to a district about the need for that? Absolutely. Parents have more power than they know. And for you to speak up about not only educating your regular ed teachers about the needs of all their students, they actually need to have specialists, just like you have medical specialists. You wouldn't go to your primary care physician to talk about a heart problem. You might start there, just like you might start in the regular classroom, talk to your kid's fourth grade teacher about your kid's needs, what are they observing? But then you need someone who's trained and has a specialty area in gifted education.
More about this important aspect of our education system after these messages from our sponsors. This episode is sponsored by ByHeart.
Babies need to eat. And whether you breastfeed or bottle feed, use formula, combine all of the above, you need options. We wanted to let you know about ByHeart baby formula. ByHeart has a patented protein blend that gets the closest to breast milk. It includes two of the most abundant proteins in breast milk. And ByHeart actually ran a clinical trial comparing their formula to a leading infant formula and proved that babies on ByHeart have softer poops, less spit up, and easier digestion. ByHeart is also the only U.S.-made infant formula to use organic, grass-fed whole milk. So if you need baby formula for your baby, consider ByHeart. New customers can get 10% off your first order by using code ONBOYS at ByHeart.com. That's BYHEART.com/podcast, and it is 10% off your first order. ByHeart.com/podcast. This is a limited time offer, and additional terms and conditions may apply. We all know that vitamins can help fill nutritional gaps in our diet, but a lot of us don't like to take vitamins because we don't like swallowing pills. How do you feel about that, Janet?
There's some days that I look at my vitamins and go, yeah, I should take those. I'll do it later. But I'll tell you what's changed. I have gotten Easy Melt vitamins. I have the D3 and I have the B12s and a multivitamin. And I just pop them in my mouth and they dissolve. And I don't have to think about swallowing a vitamin.
Yeah, and you don't necessarily need water either to have on hand to get this big vitamin down.
Yeah, no. And they taste good. And they're sugar-free. They melt quickly. The reason they melt is because of plants, not chemicals.
Ah, plant-based nutrition. For a limited time only, you can receive a free 3-month supply of Easy Melt Vitamin D3 with your first purchase. To claim your free D3, visit try.easymelt.com/onboys. That's try.easymelts.com/onboys. I'll be honest, I'm so pessimistic about this. And it's only because of my experience, right? I mean, my kids are now graduating from the same school district that I went to. It's rural Wisconsin. Zero services when I was there, zero services when they were there. And I know that there's a lot of other parents in similar situations. And I expect, I don't have stats on this, maybe you do. I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about how the pandemic disrupted education and kids are behind, kids are behind, kids are behind. We have to remediate. I have heard zero discussion about how, you know, gifted kids or 2E kids have been affected by the pandemic and we should put funding to that. And I expect that that might be a hard sell even for a lot of school boards.
Well, that's because that's a myth. It's a myth that these kids struggle and are challenged just like all other kids. And the myth that they're going to be okay.
Yes.
It's just that it's a myth. And we have to continue as advocates to turn that ship. And it, Jennifer, it is a slow turn. Here I am sitting here after 40 years of working with gifted kids and parents and superintendents and all kinds of administrators. And it is a slow turn, but it's not one that I'm going to give up. And that's why I'm writing and consulting and speaking and wherever I can find an outlet to promote support for this particular neurodiverse group, I'm going to continue to do it. And parents, as I said, have the most power. And the ones I'm consulting with now, Jennifer, they're speaking your language. I mean, I have one in Austin, Texas right now, a family, and they're moving from public to private, but they can't find the right private school. And it's just a debacle because they can't do homeschooling. If they could, they would.
Yeah.
I don't want to see that. I am a public school advocate. I want to see kids in the schools, but I don't blame parents at all for finding the right fit. And if that fits homeschooling or private, whatever, you got to do it for your kid. Parents have to be the advocate for their child. And whatever they have to do, they have to do it. And if that means homeschooling, finding the money to go private, getting in front of the school board of a public school district, you have to do it. If you think that your regular ed teachers and your principals, and this, I'm not bashing, I'm not here. I'm a public school advocate. If you think that they're going to advocate for your child on a daily basis, you are sadly mistaken. So you have to get out there and pound the pavement.
I know that there is a lot of diversity among gifted individuals, among 2E individuals, as there are in all people. But can you give us maybe a couple composites of what, you know, what giftedness might look like in boys, what 2E might look like in boys, so that those who are listening, you know, can kind of be thinking, huh, maybe this kid or that kid or...
The interesting thing is with gifted kids, generally, and this is boy and girls, generally, gifted children are introverts. You might have a very vocal boy or a very vocal girl, but what I've seen is many times these students, particularly because of their intensity, hold stuff in. So you don't really know what's going on until an event happens that really kind of throws a flag up. And one of the boys I wrote about, it was a recess incident. His teachers knew he was very verbal, could speak, you know, with much older peers and even adults on a really exciting level. But language wise, wasn't reading at grade level, wasn't spelling, just struggling terribly. Good mathematician, good at science. Long story short, he has a recess altercation and he is taken into the principal's office with the other little boy. And it's not a physical altercation because this student is so verbal. He's just telling him how it is. Like he's in court and he's defending his side of this case. And so the principal, after listening to these two boys, comes to me and says, has so-and-so been referred to gifted ed? And I said, no. I said, his test scores don't qualify. So I went back to his regular ed teacher. And then we went through the process of having him tested individually. That's another thing. 2E kids, particularly boys I've noticed, do not, their test scores will not show that they're gifted. And if a school district, here again, if a school district only defines giftedness by a test score, you are in trouble. Number one, that's not how you identify students. You look at the whole child, not just a test score on a given day. Number two, if the test scores have such difference in them, like really great at math, but the language scores are low, or the processing speed, which in twice exceptional kids, processing speed scores are generally lower. So those are ways to kind of go, well, as you'll keep looking at these kids, like, why are their scores up here on this, but their processing speed is so low, or their nonverbal ability where you're looking at pictures and manipulating them on, you know, the test and so forth, those might be low, or they could be really high. So whenever you see that difference, that's kind of a flag that you've got a twice exceptional kid. In reference to boys, my view is that I see from very early on, as you said, Jennifer, kindergarten to second grade, those 2E boys start acting out. Mm-hmm. And so whenever I hear about a student who is, you know, it might be in the teacher's lounge or in the hallway, God, so-and-so is really smart, or he said this today, or, oh, you know, and then the next thing you know, I see him sitting in the principal's office. To me, that's a flag. I want to start investigating why, again, their behaviors have come to this point where they're so frustrated. They either threw something, they hit someone, you know, another student, they told someone off, they got an altercation, could be verbal, could be physical. Those are things I want to start looking at. Why are they so frustrated and angry? And then again, you know, when we talk about minority boys, I reference this as well. When you talk about, you know, Black boys, and some of them come from urban areas where they're just trying to survive. And, you know, if we compare to a white boy in many of the Black schools in Cleveland, talk about giftedness not even being viewed. Yeah, you know, yeah. Why that kid is in fights so often. That kid is probably, could be super, super intelligent. And no one has ever even bothered to look into him and see what his strengths are. And Native American boys, if they're living on a reservation in our country, they really don't want to necessarily show their talents because they might be moved away from the land they love, the people they love, the traditions they love. This affects boys, affluent, low socioeconomic backgrounds, all different races. And then we talk about the whole world, you know, depending on where the child lives. Mm-hmm. It can really be quite challenging.
Wondering if your son is gifted or 2E? Stay tuned for more after these messages from our sponsors. As Mother's Day is coming around, I find I'm missing my mom more and more. And there's always questions and stories I wish I had asked her when she was still here. I do remember that I gave her a book once upon a time with questions for her to write the answers to. And bless her heart, she didn't answer very many, so that was really a disappointment. But fast forward to now and technology, and now we have mylifeinabook.com. It takes all those questions and stories and it puts it in a format that is sent to your person, whoever you designate, on a regular basis so that the prompts come. They're easily answered either written or voice to text, and they're captured by mylifeinabook.com. These family stories, this legacy that you want to leave for your children and your grandchildren. Mylifeinabook.com, create an unforgettable gift for your mom, your dad, your children this Mother's Day. Use our coupon code ONBOYS for 10% off. Go to mylifeinabook.com and use ONBOYS for 10% off. Create that legacy. Carry on those stories.
We talk at you all the time. Now we want to talk with you. Janet and I are partnering and we are so excited. We will be offering a 3-session series. Talk with boys like a pro about anything and everything.
3 sessions, 3 weeks in a row. Jen, I'm so excited about this because not only do we get to see each other again in a week, but we get to talk directly with our listeners, and we'll be bringing great information, but also there will be time for discussion, time for questions. And that is truly where the gold is.
We will troubleshoot in real life all those questions that pop into your head when you hear us do podcasts and make suggestions. This is your chance to ask, to clarify, to really drill down into how you can use these communication techniques and shift your strategies in your home, in your family, with your child.
Go to boysalive.com/boys and all the info is there. Get registered. This is going to be a whole lot of fun. Again, that's Talk with Boys Like a Pro about anything and everything. We will be live in May. All the details are at boysalive.com/boys. And get registered. Don't delay. This is going to be so much fun, and it's going to give you peace of mind, new information, new insights. We hope you'll join us. So bring this back for us. Personalize it for us. So, you know, yes. I'm a parent. I've got a 5-year-old, a 7-year-old, whatever it might be. You know, maybe he talked early. Maybe he's reading at age 3. How do I, as a parent, guide that child, find the programs, but also just how do I parent this child?
Yeah. Let's start from the school point, and then we'll move into the parenting point. So the school point of view is, you know, my child, before they ever start kindergarten, is reading and comprehending. You know, I have a lot of parents will say, you know, my child's reading. And my question is, do they understand what they're reading? So they're reading and comprehending well above grade level. They get into kindergarten. And the first thing a parent should do is speak to the teacher with anecdotal information, not just a broad statement, my kid's so smart, because teachers hear that a lot. My kid is so smart. And they may even throw the word gifted in there. My kid is gifted. Meeting with, let's say, a kindergarten teacher, I want that teacher to know at 3 years old, this is what they were reading. Tell them the name of the book and how they responded to the book. I had a parent come to me. Her daughter was in kindergarten and she wanted her accelerated. She wanted her to skip first grade and move into second, which is acceleration's another thing we can talk about. But I said, tell me a couple anecdotal stories. And so parents need to be ready with those kinds of things. And so this parent said to me, her grandparents gave her this book, this big book of animals from all across the world. And she started putting different colored sticky notes on the pages of the book. And the parent said, we need to be careful with the book, Susan, because grandma gave you that book. And why are you putting all those sticky notes on the pages? She was categorizing them by the continents that they lived on. And so I went at 5. And so for the child, and the child explained it like that. So schools, the parent goes in and says, I'm just going to tell you two anecdotal stories about my child. And if it's reading, my next question is to the teacher, how are you going to adapt your instruction for my child?
What do you do?
And they say no.
What do you do? Because so often the teacher will look at you and not have an answer.
And because they don't have the training.
You're right.
That's exactly
there.
Janet, that's it. If you get that response or that vibe from the teacher that they're not going to modify their instruction in some way or accommodate your child, the next step would be to meet with the administration. For you to be part of the team to help support your child, I do not advocate going straight to the principal. That will get you some thumbs down. So start with your child's teacher. And if you feel that it's not a great fit, being very professional, very accommodating, go to the principal, have a meeting. I met with my child's teacher. He or she is great. However, I'm concerned that fill in the blanks and ask the principal, how does your school accommodate for children who are reading well above grade level? How is your school accommodating those who are already doing long division in first grade? Mm-hmm. So that will tell you a lot about that school. And so, Jennifer, I'm sure you came to a crossroads where
we did this. We talked with the teacher first. The teacher was like, huh? We did some more talking with our son, talked with the teacher and the principal. And my son, halfway through first grade, had expressed like, he wanted to learn more, he wanted to learn multiplication. Like, they're still doing addition, and he wanted multiplication. And when he said that, like, we sat at the kitchen table, and within, 5 minutes, he got the main gist of it. He's like, oh, okay. So I showed the school, this is what he was doing. So their option at that point was, well, maybe we could put him up to second grade math, for that. And it was something. And in their defense, we're talking about a very small Catholic school in a very small community. They do not have fantastic resources, neither does the public school, to be honest. And so ultimately, like, I mean, this is just such a tiny little piece of the problem that you can help us with. That's why we made the decision to do something else.
I'm an advocate of subject and whole grade acceleration. And again, every school district, every state should have a policy in place for acceleration as an educational option for those kids who are advanced. But
Yes.
as you said, Jennifer, it is not the be all end all because that still isn't meeting the social emotional needs of those gifted kids on a daily basis.
Yeah.
So it's got to be the whole child. It can't just be you go over here to second grade and do that math every day and then come back to the regular classroom and things are still done the same way for every single child. Like they're all exactly identical children and they're not. One size does not fit all.
Can we talk a bit about that
Asynchronistic.
asynchronistic development, especially when we're talking about boys? We know, broadly speaking, boys tend to develop and mature more slowly than their female counterparts. So you may very well have a first grade, second grade, fourth grade boy who is intellectually very advanced in a specific area, and it may be beneficial. Like, he may be able to do sixth grade math or sixth grade reading and projects. And emotionally, he's not even close to that. What can you tell us about how parents and educators can kind of manage that gap while
Right.
supporting both parts of the child?
Asynchronistic development is a hallmark of gifted kids. So again, they may be academically intelligent and their intelligence is well above same age peers, but their social emotional development is not. And so you may have a fourth grader working well above their peers in math, could be in many subjects. But then something frustrates them so much that they actually have a meltdown or a tantrum, like right there in front of everybody. It's not that, in fourth grade is 9 and 10 years old. You would think 9 and 10 years old, why are they doing that? But I've seen it, and they melt down. So educators and parents need to be aware, particularly with boys, to help them understand that asynchronistic development. Just like you should help that child understand why they have these traits. Again, I go back to comparing about medical diagnoses. If I understand I have diabetes, I kind of have a sigh of relief that now I know why my body works the way it does, right? If I work with a 2E boy, I want to, as a parent and educator, I want to help them understand why they had that blow up at 10 years old. When you think that 10-year-olds generally would be able to kind of manage that a little bit, but gifted or 2E boys struggle with that. They struggle. And so, as you said, Jennifer, boys generally have that. They're a little behind the girls developmentally. But then you add that layer of giftedness or twice exceptionality, and then you have a whole nother layer to that onion that has to be supported. And I don't want to make a 2E boy feel like it's their fault again, that they're acting that way. They are intense, but I talk about coping mechanisms. That's a whole nother thing. Parents and teachers start working with the child to help them understand themselves. This is why you're intense. This is why you're, maybe a little, you're not great at this, but you're really great at this. So we're going to work with your strengths to help you really understand your challenges. All those things kind of come together like a puzzle. And when that happens, it's a beautiful thing. But we can't keep pointing the finger and blaming those kids for something that's out of their control. Just like I wouldn't blame a person who needs a wheelchair to get up a ramp at a restaurant, or someone who has to wear eyeglasses because they can't see really well. Their brains are working differently It really comes down to continuing to educate those people, parents included, that work with their child on a daily basis. It gets frustrating, and I have had parents go, easier said than done, Deb. But it is a day-to-day, year-to-year. And as we know, as parents, we're always parents. My daughter's 34. We'll always still be parenting her when she asks for it.
I wish you all could see Janet's face right now. She's just beaming.
Well, and I mean, this comes back to what we always say is you have to parent the child that you have, not the child that you imagine
to have. Dreamed about. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And I want to just underscore the intensity of these kids. That can be really tough to parent and teach, I would say. Also, you've got kids who are, you know, they are questioning authority, they're questioning the teacher. And you say in your book, you know, you talk about these kids, discipline may be necessary, but punishment is not.
That's correct. I, on many occasions, the gifted students that I worked with in my profession, I've worked with inclusion, which means I went into the regular classroom and team taught with regular ed teachers, as well as if the district had pullout gifted programs, I did that as well. So I've actually told students that I've worked with that they were being rude. And they would look at Ms. Generelli like, what? Did you just tell me I was being rude? Yes, I did. It's not that I'm an advocate of let's ignore all the behaviors. That is not what I'm saying at all. We have to understand their behaviors and where they came from. And so if a child's being rude, I don't care what type of child they are, they're being rude. And in society, we have to teach them that kind of, you know, those types of things. But again, if a child's telling off a teacher because, as you said, Jennifer, they're up there diagramming a sentence incorrectly and they're teaching me how to do that, that's a different story. Now, you do teach them how a better way to approach that, because that could be their boss one day and you don't want to get fired. That's how I work with gifted and TUI students. I help them understand their behaviors, but I also understand them that you have to live in society. And this is what society expects of you. Manners and their consequences for your behavior if it crosses this line of being rude or harming someone or those types of things.
I feel like that's an important point for parents to hear, consider, and think about as well. Because when you have a child who is spending a lot of time in a system that you know is not ideal for him, and he's got his emotional ups and downs, I think it's kind of a pretty natural to want to compensate for that at home and make home a safe place and a comfortable place. Yes. And that's great. And you can do that. And as you said, Deb, all of our children, all levels of abilities, need to learn how to live in the world with other humans. Yes. We're not doing our kids any favors by letting them continue to explode at people, by letting them continue to tell off people. Yes. What might be a way, let's say you have a 7-year-old boy, and let's say it's at home. Let's say I'm making this up as I go, you know, let's say it's at home and maybe he had somebody over to play and the other kid, you know, did something that your son just finds absolutely like, why would you ever do that? And he just, you know, goes off and has a whole fit and it turns into this fight. What advice would you give parents for how to talk about that with their son in the moment or later also?
Right. That's interesting, Jennifer, because I have a parent who talked to me about their child could not, it was a boy, could not play board games with other kids. And so always, you know, ended up throwing board game pieces and that type of thing. That kind of ties back to giftedness and friendships. Many gifted students have difficulty with friendships. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons for that is, again, they see things differently than maybe their same age peers. And when they try to go to explain it, you know, they're thinking, others just don't get it. And that just rises that frustration level where they do act out. So as a parent, I would have to talk to that child again about, you're thinking this way, other people may be thinking this way. Just like you wear a size 5 shoe, they wear a size 8 shoe. Just starting to get them to, depending on their age, getting them to think about differences, right? Their family is vegan. They don't eat meat. Our family does eat steak every Friday night. You think this way about that game, but your friend Robert was thinking this way about this game. Does that give you, you know, in your mind, John, does that give you the authority to get mad at him because he's thinking a different way?
I pretty much expect very young boys, especially. Yes, yeah. It does. I'm right.
Yeah. Well, then I go off a little bit, and I've done this as well, talk to them about friendships. And even with young children, young, smart children, if you continue to allow that, if I keep seeing that, John, then what's going to happen is every time we call his parents for a play date to come over and do whatever we're doing, they're going to say no. And pretty soon you're not going to have anyone wanting to come over to play. And it's not a threat. It's a fact of life. If you keep rubbing against that grain, you will not have any adult friends either. It starts from very young. And when those kids are gifted, they're bright, they're intense, and they only think their way. And believe me, I've one of the ones I worked with who's now an attorney, he was like that. It's his way or the highway. And I just said, no, John, it isn't. Mm-hmm. It isn't that, no.
But I love that you wrapped up your book, including words from a student that you worked with. You've been working with kids long enough that you're seeing them into adulthood. And this particular student is, his name is Jake. And he was able to reflect back. Jake, who's going to law school, was able to reflect back and kind of give this message to parents of, do this. Because I've lived this. Can you kind of wrap up our conversation with the words from Jake?
I met Jake when he was in second grade, and he is that student I mentioned that was extremely verbal, but had a language learning disability, a diagnosed language learning disability. So my fourth grade, he knew he wanted to be an attorney, but he was, like we just talked about, he was the boy that his attitude and point of view was the only one that mattered. And he could argue it so well that you just finally just went, uncle, you gave up.
You're exhausted.
You're exhausted. His mom said that, Jennifer, I'm exhausted. But he finally, through the process of advocating for him, his parents, some really great teachers through junior high and high school, got him to a really good place to see different points of view. And he knew as an attorney, he would have to see different points of view. So that's how we tied that in. I actually got a mentor for him in fourth grade. We took him out of one of his classes, and mentorships are wonderful. But with this male attorney who volunteered in our school district, got my student to think about different perspectives. And you can't always be right, and you need to be a good writer, and all these things that he was challenged with as a gifted boy. And I just thought, light bulb moments. And they started coming. The expression, it takes a village. It really did take a village to turn his ship. So now I stayed in touch with him whenever he came home. He went to Ohio State, and then he went on to, and well, I just have to say this, ladies, because I'm so proud of these kids who have had rough beginnings, but ended up very successful. And it can happen. He ended up coming to lunch with me one time after he graduated from Ohio State. And in fourth grade, he told me he wanted to go to Harvard. He was waitlisted at all the Ivy League schools for undergrad. I said, you know what? Your dreams are alive. Keep going. He sat with me at lunch and said, Ms. Generelli, I have to tell you something. I said, what is it? His eyes started watering up a little bit, and he said, I got accepted to Harvard Law School. And he and I are both crying in the restaurant.
Janet,
and this is a kid I knew from second grade.
And we're
still
too.
In touch.
Yeah.
He's an attorney. Awesome. He's an attorney in Washington, D.C., twice exceptional boy, whose journey could have gone very,
very
badly.
Yeah.
And I reference some of these 2E boys end up in the juvenile delinquent system, which is not the place for them.
Yeah. I think one of the things to highlight out of that story as we wipe our tears, because it's amazing, is that mentorship piece too. So bringing that in, parents can really pay attention to that piece. Deb, you are doing amazing work in the world. Your book is called Twice Exceptional Boys, A Roadmap to Getting It Right. Thank you so much for all the work you're doing. Tell our listeners where they can connect with you directly.
Ladies, it's been a joy. As I said, gifted ed, twice exceptionality, neurodiversity is a passion. Even though I'm not in the classroom anymore, I want to continue this advocacy for that group of individuals. So listeners that want to contact me can find me at deb.generelli@gmail. And then I also have a website, deborahgenerelli.com. And I'm on LinkedIn as well. I've just co-authored a second book with a twice exceptional adult male who I met on LinkedIn. He was diagnosed highly gifted and autistic at 45 years old.
Oh my.
He found me on LinkedIn and wanted me to help him write a book because his challenge is writing. And but his life is fascinating. He's been a very successful businessman. He's now teaching at a twice exceptional high school in Moab, Utah. And our book's coming out late summer, early fall. So it's about awesome. 2E adults.
Wow. I love it.
Thank you for all the work you're doing, advocating for boys becoming great men.
Yes. Thanks, Deb.
Yeah. Great meeting you, ladies. Thank you.
That is Deb Generelli. Oh, she's doing great work in this field of gifted kids, 2E kids. We hope this conversation has been valuable for you. This is the On Boys Parenting Podcast. We are your co-host, Jennifer L.W. Fink of buildingboys.net. And I'm Janet Allison of boysalive.com. Thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing our podcast with others in your world, in your circle. It means a lot to us. And thank you for supporting our sponsors.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.